Thank you so much and greetings from Singapore. It's my pleasure being here at the Capital Link. Let me quickly introduce my panel. We have with us Mr. Aristides Pittas, Chairman and CEO, Euroseas Limited and Eurodry Limited. Mr. George Yorokos, Executive Chairman at Global Ship Lease. Mr. John Dragnes, he's the CEO of Golden Port Group. Mr. Paulis Hazianou, sorry if I got that wrong, CEO at Safe Bulkers, and Mr. Stamatis Santis, Chairman and CEO at Synergy Maritime Holdings Corp and United Maritime Corporations. We'll be spending some time talking about the dry bulk market, a bit about the container, and essentially looking at the Greek shipping at the forefront of global trade and commerce. Please take your seats. Thank you so much. So let me start with the opening question. We've had a very strong freight markets over the last few years. If you go into 2024, that has started pretty well as well. So what does the panel think about the current state of the market and how are the Greek ship owners positioned for that? So maybe who wants to go first? Aris, do you want to? We're talking about the current state of the market. How do you see that?
Good morning, everybody. Which market do you want to talk about?
Let's start with the dry bulk first, yeah?
All markets are doing quite well right now. As always, when we have bad events for the world, wars, disruptions, they create inefficiencies and they increase the ton-mile that ships need to travel. So the result is always a relatively good market, and this is what we're seeing. Our group of companies is active in container ships and dry bulk vessels. And I have to say that we are doing quite well in these markets. And as long as the disruption continues, I think this will definitely go on. There's a slight difference between dry bulk and container market on the supply side. The supply side for containers has increased and is going to be increasing dramatically. So we have been preparing ourselves in the container market for a poorer market. And this is not transpiring. Just the last month, we have seen charter rates going through the roof. And they don't seem a stopping. So it's very difficult to say how things will develop because of the geopolitical issues. If they are resolved, then we see the normal supply-demand balances may result in a balancing of the market. On the dry bulk side, on the contrary, the order book is extremely small. And there, even if things subside, or when they subside, we still think that the balance is very positive. So overall, these two markets that we're active in are in a very good shape, and I think will continue to be in that good shape, not least because the capacity to build new ships is really not there. Right now, the shipyards that are existing in the world are taking orders for delivery 2027 and 2028 already, which is 3-4 years down the line. There is a lack of shipyards to build more ships once this becomes again needed. So very positive outlook on the markets at this stage.
Thank you. So, George, staying on the containers, right? We've had the disruption in the Red Sea, which essentially changed the market. How do you see that market? Will it continue? What are the operators telling you, particularly with respect to the Red Sea disruptions?
The recent development in Red Sea was unexpected completely and very welcomed by the container industry. As Aristides said, the order book is quite severe, mainly, of course, focused on the larger ships, but still it's a very large order book. And we were expecting the market to soften, and it had started to soften. And then suddenly the Red Sea situation came up, and things started to change unexpectedly. Now, this is a cascade effect, because the Red Sea is not just the Red Sea. The Red Sea has created port congestions, and which are growing. Then it has also created a shortage of boxes to put the goods in, and so we can carry them on container ships. And that is also growing. And we think that, you know, all of this is like COVID. You know, when COVID came and things started to change, then disruptions came in, and disruptions played a huge role on freight rates. And the same is starting to, you know, happen now. In combination, of course, with the restocking of the U.S., as you know, they have been running low inventories for the past you know, quarters, and now they have to restock as people are starting to buy back goods. Therefore, all of that is was an unexpected present to the container industry, a very welcome one. Now, the question is, how long is this going to last? The fleet is about 10-15% of the fleet is let's say reduced because of this going around the Cape of South Africa. So it's, the question mark is, how long is this going to last, the disruption?
I think one more after effect of that is the emissions have also doubled, right? So just by almost 80% of container shipping fleet diverted, we have higher emissions as well. John, moving on to dry bulk, right? Just in terms of quickly summarizing where you see the market, what are the challenges, what are we seeing particularly on the dry bulk trade and the bigger and the smaller segments and so on. Opening remarks, please.
Yeah, well, good morning, first of all. Thank you. I mean, we are a private company involved. We have about, we have 45 vessels in the water, quite diversified fleet, between mostly large handies and ultras and some product tankers, some containers. So we'll be diversified. And we also have a new building program of nine product tankers, LR2s and IMO 2MRs under construction currently in China. So our exposure, let's say, is a bit, it's more focused between dry bulk and product tankers. Mm-hmm. And we do have a back end of the containers. We do have a few containers left, only six. I mean, we sold most of them during the uptimes of
good decision.
COVID. But we were lucky enough, it seems now, as George very well described, and Aristides as well, that obviously the market is improving because of the Houthi disruption. Regarding dry bulk, I mean, you know, there is discussion that the fleet is underbuilt, but I will not necessarily agree on that. I mean, with regards to the mid segment of Ultramaxes and Kamsarmaxes, there is quite a few. I mean, it's about 12% the order book if you bundle together Supras and Ultras, and I think Kamsars are about the same. I think the fleet is underbuilt in Handies and Capes only. That's what I think. Regarding demand, I think demand is strong. China is continuing to demand a lot of imports, iron ore, coal, need for security, need for security of energy. And also, for example, grains and soybean imports have been very strong. So overall, I think the dry bulk market is good. But, I mean, there is some new buildings coming. So we need to be aware of that. However, the need for an efficient, modern fleet is there, as have been described, whether, you know, looking at alternative fuels or whether looking at minimizing your energy consumption. So, you know, I think the modern fleet will give you an advantage trading-wise in the future.
Sure. Thank you. So, Matthias, your views?
Well, thank you, and good morning, everyone. Big congrats to Nicolas and Olia for another successful Capital Link. I echo the previous speaker's comments, and I completely agree. What we must distinguish is the fundamentals compared to the geopolitical and short-term events. The tanker cycle and the container cycle that we experienced was not, of course, the catalyst was COVID and, you know, the invasion of Russia in the Ukraine and the Red Sea, but the actual issue in the previous super cycles and the current super cycles of tankers and containers has been the years and years of underbuilding those assets. So people just came up to the reckoning that there was not enough ships when the catalysts happened. The same thing is now happening on the dry bulk as well. On the Capesizes, we have the lowest order book of the last 25 years. We have an aging fleet. And as you can imagine, this kind of short-term catalyst or maybe long-term catalyst like the Red Sea the wars and other events that are happening could be something that's going to drive the market much higher. So we are very bullish, both from the fundamentals point of view and most importantly from the severe undersupplying of the ships in the next few years, as well as, of course, the short-term catalysts that are arising from geopolitical events that, in our opinion, will continue to become more and more frequent in the following years. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll go deeper into some of that supply side and decarbonization later, but policy of use, please.
Yes, my views, I tend to agree with Stamatis, not so much with Yannis. I think the market, we will have a good time for ship owners, at least for the next 12 months, in all sectors. We know tankers, containers are overperforming, and dry bulk is quite good, so we don't have any complaints. And we had a good 3 years out of the last four. So after the 8 years of very low market between 2012 and 2020, we recovered those losses and in a year, and the other 2 years is pure profit. So we're doing well. I think prices of ships are going to get more expensive. As we talk, they are getting more expensive because of the good market. Everybody sees the problem with the geopolitical situations. And you have to bear in mind that there has been no scrapping in the last 3 or 4 years. So maybe the order book is 10% in Ultras and 10% in Kamsar. In Capes, it's only 5%. And nobody can afford to build a Cape today simply because we have interest rates at 6% and a Cape is costing $75 million in a good yard. So a lot of cargo of the Capes will be covered by the other sizes. And those sizes, you have to remember, 3 years or 4 years have no scrapping. Maybe this year we have 1% scrapping, maybe 1%. So people will keep extending the lifetime of those ships as much as they can at a time when all regulations are against those ships. So I'm very optimistic for the next 3 or 4 years of the market. Maybe the best year will be this year or part of next year. Of course, we have the question mark of trade wars and tariffs after the elections in the U.S. Even President Biden has started some of that trade war lately. But I think the freight market is severely undersupplied at the time when world trade and ton miles are increasing.
Sure, thank you. So we at S&P Global are essentially calling this a weaponization of global shipping choke points. We put research out, as all of you in this community as well as understand, that the basic principle of freedom of navigation is being severely challenged, right? We're talking about 70 attacks which have occurred in the Red Sea. So we feel for that, certainly. But I think now I want to come to China, right? So it's something which is very, very important if you look at what Chinese macro data has been doing, right? It has been weak. The economy certainly has clearly been showing some headwinds, but the commodity flows have been extremely strong, and particularly in the dry bulk market, the first quarter was again very strong, some close to around 7-8% higher on the commodity side, despite a lack of a major stimulus, right? So just sticking to the dry bulk, what explains this and whether this is sustainable, right? Because when you look at China, the macro headwinds are there, but it is very well performing on the commodity side. So maybe starting with you, Aris.
Yes. Getting into China and continuing a little bit our previous discussion, in the previous peak of the markets in 2005 and 2007, China built many, many new shipyards. There were all these green shipyards. The order book, just to put it in perspective, jumped to 100%. So the 12% we are seeing currently for the dry bulk industry is really much, much smaller. So, and China at that time allowed all these green yards to come up and create all this extra capacity, most of which has already been wound down. Today, China is much more careful on this policy. It is not supporting new yards. We don't have a lot of new yards in China. And although recently we are seeing, because of the building crisis, some workers going to work to shipyards again, there is scarcity of employees generally, even in China. So, talking about shipyards and shipyard capacity, I don't see that growing very, very strongly. And that is always going to be to support what Paulie said previously, that prices should probably go higher rather than lower, also due to the inflationary processes. I think, yes, China has had this huge problem of the real estate crisis. And it is hurting it, and it will. But we see what you just said, Raoul, that the economy is okay. I mean, it is doing okay. Imports are doing okay. I don't see how this can stop. In fact, I think that China will start to come out of this issue. So I'm very confident there as well.
Thank you. So does anyone share that optimistic view on China? Go ahead, please. Yeah, John.
Just a comment on the shipyards. I mean, obviously there is less shipyards. You know, in 2007, we had 1,050 shipyards, 2007 and 8, and these went down to 350 in China. But obviously, let's say before this current cycle started, we were at 70% capacity in terms of CGT, of production capacity in China, but now through efficiency gains, through some expansion, you know, New Times is expanding, maybe they're talking about reopening Rongsheng, you know, some Henli, you know, the ex-STX in China, you know, opened again, and these are large shipyards. So I think we're going to be at around 80% of CGT of capacity compared to 2008. But it's another interesting aspect to consider is what the Chinese are doing with regards to new orders. I mean, we know Costco, Shandong China merchants are looking at ordering 300 plus vessels now across various sectors. So obviously that's soaking up even further capacity. So I do agree with the panel that there's going to be scarcity of new building slots in China, which is, of course, the current most major shipbuilding nation. As far as the market is concerned, again, I don't want to be pessimistic, you know, in the panel, obviously, I don't want to be the slagging a bad note. You know, we're fully invested. We own 27 bulkers, and I'm not in the market selling any bulkers. So obviously, I'm taking a similar position. But I am saying that, you know, when we have 250 or 300 ultras on order, I'm not just saying they're not, it's not nothing. That's all I'm saying. You know, there are vessels coming in and, you know, the market is good. We're seeing a very strong Asian market at the moment, but the Atlantic currently, for example, is quite weak. And also we're seeing lack of period market availability in the dry bulk market, you know, opposite to the tanker market, which a 3-year charter is nothing. You know, everyone with a modern vessel can easily get a very decent 3-year charter. So I think also charters are a little bit you know, holding back to taking long-term commitments, unless it is special projects, you know, or very large vessels like Newcastle Maxis. And so again, I'm also positive on dry bulk, but again, on these mid-size sector, mid-size vessels, I think there is, let's say, an established new building book coming.
Sure, thank you. Let's go ahead, please.
Well, the last couple of years, we've been hearing about the Chinese housing market and the Evergrande and all these major real estate companies that blew up. And that is, of course, a given. However, let's not forget that in 2023, last year, China imported close to 10% more materials than the previous year. That's a massive increase in their imports. And at the same time, they exported a very significant higher number of steel products. So China is still there. The manufacturing capacity is one of the strongest we've seen in the last maybe 10 years. So in respect of demand, no matter whether they satisfy their own housing property market or anything else, they're still producing a lot of steel. And let's not forget that the global demand for steel is still very high. And China is producing 50% of the global steel production. So let's have that in our minds while we talk about the Chinese market. They still produce one of the most important commodities that the world needs for their infrastructure needs, wherever that may be.
very important point. Go ahead, please, Pallas.
Yes, this time last year I was very pessimistic about China. It's not the same now, and this can be justified with the very high Capesize market. If you see the data released this morning, China manufacturing growth is at a two-year high, 51.7%, above the estimate of 51.5% they were released in the morning. It's the highest since June of 2022. Also, the CRB index showing commodity prices is at a new high, higher than the mid-2022 levels, showing that since commodities going up, it means there is huge demand for those commodities. So I'm becoming optimistic about China, and also the fact that shipyards, as John rightly said, is occupied by Chinese orders. We will pay more money for our orders. We will have to pay more money. We only hope that interest rates start coming down so we can afford to replace the remaining of the ships in our fleet. So if interest rates do not come down, we have a problem. We will have difficulty to order Kamsarmax in China over 40 million. We have difficulty to pay 8%, the banks and margin, and we only hope that we can see lower interest rates, maybe hopefully in the second half of this year. Many people, that they doubt that this will happen, and let's see. And whatever happens, we have the security and the safety valve of the low scrapping of the last three, four years, immediately the market drops for whatever reason, either geopolitical comes normalized or trade wars or whatever, ships will flood the scrapyards. And this will be the safety valve of all shipping markets.
Well, thank you. I think just from S&P, that's the PMI which we publish. And one thing which we've been looking at China particularly is the fixed asset investment, excluding real estate, has been very strong. Manufacturing, infrastructure, so they've moved that credit from the housing market to other parts of the economy, including exports. So that's been helping them. So what I'm hearing from the panel is it's more of a supply side story, right? Across the segment, the supply side has been pretty weak in terms of growth, dry bulk demand overall, as well as container demand has been okay, right? But I think one thing which I want to understand is we're talking about the Greek ship owners being at the forefront, right? You had great cash flow over the last few years. Profitability has been strong. The debt levels have come down across, right? But we're not seeing the owners rushing to the yard. So what's keeping you? Is it we're talking about the newfound discipline? And container market is slightly different, but on the dry bulk, is it the newfound discipline? Asset prices too high? So I want to spend a bit on the investment strategies, what all of you have, right? And both private and public companies in that sense. So, Aris, why are you not ordering that many vessels?
Well, I don't think that's actually correct. I mean, Greeks are still ordering the highest number of ships after the Chinese, right?
Yeah.
Lately, there have been quite a few orders, also in the dry bulk space, by Greek owners. So I wouldn't really agree on that.
Compared to the last outs, it's a trickle compared to if you have such strong balance sheets, right? Yeah.
Yes, the Greeks have a strong balance sheet, and they are investing in newer ships. They are investing a lot in retrofitting older ships. I'm looking in the market to order a couple of ships, and everywhere I go, there is Greeks there talking to the yards as well. I really can't agree on that comment. The reasons, of course, that we have all been reluctant up till very recently, I think, were the considerations about how the regulations are going to evolve, about the environmental issues. We have a little bit of a clearer picture right now on the regulations. I think that, the European Union ran a little bit ahead of everybody else, but maybe that should be the case, because we are indeed, one of the wealthiest after the US economies, Europe as a whole. Probably we're overdoing it, as I heard in the previous panels as well. But I think within the next 2 or 3 years, we will have IMO regulation and global regulations, and things will smoothen out. So I think that we don't know, of course, what the solution will be on the future or on the future of fuels, but there is a pathway, and it will lead somewhere, and we'll see exactly where it leads. But in the meantime, I think the consensus is that existing fuels, with the addition of biofuels and maybe later becoming e-fuels, might be a solution, and that has given a little bit the comfort of a lot of owners to start ordering ships again, as we have seen during this year.
Certainly, so decarbonization playing a part there. George?
Yeah. Well, Warren Buffett have said that investors are trading between fear and greed. So this is, I think, a very good statement. Six months ago, people who have ordered containers, they were looking like, excuse me for the expression, idiots. And then the hoodies came, and they're looking now as, you know, supermen and great minds and stuff. Generally speaking, I think whether you have a public company or a private company, there's no difference in investment. You know, the investment has to be when you think it's a good time to invest. And I genuinely believe good times to invest is when ships are cheap, whether new buildings or secondhand, when the market is low, when people are afraid, when you don't see any light at the end of the tunnel, that's the best time to invest. And then you have to invest in a big way. You have to go big. You cannot invest, oh my God, you know, I'm not so sure, let me buy a couple of ships. And then the market turns and there's shit, I forgot to buy so many ships and now I'm missing the train, and then you start buying expensive ships. This is the typical mistake ship owners we make. I think that you have to be brave, and you have to be sticking to your policy, whether it's for new buildings or for all second-hand ships, and do not change your policy, regardless of whether you are full of cash or half empty of cash. And, you know, cash burning a hole in the pocket of people should not be the driver of investment. The driver of investment should be whatever is for each one, the actual investment. Many times we see people investing. Sometimes I hear this stupid argument that, why are you building ships, I'm asking? And the other guy says, because they're cheaper than secondhand. This is the most stupid argument I've ever heard in my life. It means that the market is overheated and you should steer away from the market, not go and order ships because the secondhand are higher than the new buildings. But, you know, this is the nature of the beast. We're humans.
Thank you. John, I think you mentioned about the smaller segment, the middle segment having higher order book, right? Let's talk about the Capes, because we're just at 3-4%, 2% growth for the next 4-5 years. So why are people not building enough Capes?
Well, I mean, there is a competition for the slots, especially large Capes in Newcastlemax. You know, only a few shipyards can build quality Newcastlemaxes and large Capes, and those are pretty much fully booked. I mean, there are some people ordering holding vessels, but I mean, that cannot expand massively. And as I mentioned before, combined with the Chinese appetite for certain levels of that size, and some yards like Costco Yangzhou, for example, booking certain slots in case, you know, Costco Shipping asks for them, for example, these further decreases the availability of slots. As far as Japan is concerned, I mean, there is a lot of demand from, there are Greeks obviously active there, but there are also a lot of demand from the Japanese community. You know, a lot of purchase options through the BBHP schemes have been exercised.
Yes.
So they are more or less have to order new ships in order to follow this taxation scheme that is prevalent in Japan. So there is a lot of Japanese demand also in the local shipyards. Korea obviously is not present in Capes, or they're focusing on gas mostly. So there is scarcity of beds as well. So I don't think that will change materially in the next few years. because simply there are no shipyards to build them.
So volume axes are not coming on. No new orders for volume axes in the next 10 years, 15 years, right? Because Korea is building Qatar gas LNGs for 2030, 31, right? Yeah. Go ahead, Stamatis. Just on asset values, then where do you see that? Yeah.
Well, I couldn't agree more. It's a combination of factors. Number one, like Yanis just said, it's very hard to get a slot, and it's very hard to get a slot prior to the 2027-2028. So even if someone was, like George said before, crazy to put new orders on Capes and Newcastle Maxes, you still cannot get the slots available for that to happen. So having said that, the price differential is also quite big. So, you know, high 70s right now, $70 million for a new ship in a quality yard as compared to 35 or even 40 million for a 10-year-old quality ship that will practically earn the same amount of rate doesn't really make any financial sense in the minds of many owners like us. So I don't believe that on the Cape sizes we'll see any rush for new building orders in the next 2 or 3 years. And certainly there are no deliveries because it's, you know, infeasible to see any ships being delivered.
Thank you. Paulis, if you want to add something.
Yes, I think the lack of berths is a fact. And ship owners usually are not disciplined. We are not disciplined. None of us is disciplined. And simply because the reason is when you have good years and you make money, the safest place to put your money is the ocean. It's not the banks. It's not other businesses. We don't know. We cannot compete with the experts in real estate or in hotels or other things. So you put them the excess liquidity back on ships. So all this fact that all the sectors make very big money the last 3 years will lead to more inquiry for ships. And this will keep raising prices another, I believe, 10% on new builds and similar 10-15% on second hand. So each company, they know what ships they need to replace. If it makes sense, I don't agree with Stamatis that a new build and 10-15-year-old ship earning the same money, at least my data, nowhere near the same money. It's a matter of consumption. Fuel will not get more cheap than what it is now. And I think you add to this the EU ETS, which is going to 70% in a few months' time. On trips, you see with new builds, phase 3 vessels now, you are paying 30,000 and 40,000 less per call in Europe. Next year will be 50,000 less, and the year after, 70,000 euros less. So all this is money in the pocket of the owner of that ship. So you add that on the fuel cost, and you make a very big number. Also, 1st of January next year, we start with the fuel EU burden on top of that. So there's a huge difference there. The thing is to find the proper way to do the order at a reasonable level, which at the moment I'm not very optimistic. And the yards, they were in for about 10 years. They are making their money back now. They are waiting for us, and they will hit us very hard. And also the fact that Chinese owners like Costco or the other, Yanis, John said before, they are booking slots themselves now that they see China economy moving on. They are booking the slots for themselves, and also they are preparing for geopolitical changes as well, and they want to hold their imports in their own hands. All of this will make our life more difficult in the next few years. Of course, you know, this is what we see now. In 6 months, in the next panels next March, we may be saying different things. But at the moment, we are quite optimistic for the next 12 months.
Thank you. I want to close by having a discussion on decarbonization. But just to add, because we had the pleasure of having Mr. Christopher at our S&P Global CERAWeek conference, and it's an energy conference, but over the last few years, we have shipping panels there. So shipping is making that wave with energy majors, oil companies and all talking about this newfound opportunities because they have to get methanol, hydrogen, ammonia, biofuels and so on, right?
So I think starting from you, George, in that sense, right? We know container shipping has essentially moved into, or rather, if you look at the order book, it's mostly methanol, right? The big carriers essentially have moved into methanol. As per our numbers, by 2030, availability of methanol will all be taken by the container shipping companies. That leaves the tankers and dry bulk fighting if they go in that direction. What are you seeing for containers per se? Is the fuel of the future methanol?
I do not know is the honest answer.
Yeah.
And when we talk about methanol, it has to be green methanol,
yes,
right? Because gray methanol is better to use fuel. It's very pollutive. So no, I just do not know. I don't think the liner companies know either.
Mm.
That's the honest truth. And I don't think anybody knows what's the future fuel. I don't think any of these fuels is really going to be the future fuel, if you ask me. My humble opinion is that the only fuel that is zero emission and it's doesn't have the problem of where you're going to find it and so on and so forth is nuclear.
Mm.
So that the nuclear power on ships is, I believe, the only solution that will come eventually. Once we get over the taboo we have about it, there's new types of reactors that are not dangerous and so on and so forth.
Oh, interesting. Haris, what do you think fuel of the future? It's a mix, yeah. But
yes, I touched upon it previously. Obviously, nobody really knows what will happen. But today, if I had to make a guess, I would say that it would be keeping conventional fuels, blending them with biofuels, getting much more biofuels in, and eventually transforming into e-fuels, but fuels that could be burned by
current
engines, really.
Yes, thank you.
And where there is already, you know, the infrastructure for bunkering and everything.
Yeah, thank you. John?
But of course, you know, please. This is not to be taken as a certainty.
Yeah, John?
Yeah.
I'm just rushing because I'm looking at the clock.
Sure.
Thank you.
A modern fleet, efficient operations and dropping fuels in the short term. And later on, I mean, it seems today, obviously, as we said, we need to factor in, you know, that the shipyards are full and they want to pump out as many ships as possible, right, to maximize the return. So they're not that keen to experiment with new designs currently. So they will tend to ask you to place a repeat vessel. So not very optimistic in the short term that we're going to see massive changes in design and on the vessels the way they are operated. And ammonia is a bit far away to be, you know, the ammonia engine. So in the short term, I mean, we're keeping, as we said well in the previous panel as well, you know, pragmatic solutions and taking it day by day.
Thank you. Paul is maybe.
Yes. We have two orders of methanol dual fuel ships, simply because that was the only one available we could do with alternate fuels to be in the game and see how it develops. Not that we know something more than the other people know. We did it to be in the game. Ammonia, I don't think it will work apart from specific routes. And let's see if the engines are developed and when they will be developed. Maybe there will be specific routes, mainly into Japan, that they could work. Other people are using wind and other things. Let's see also those if they will work. Regarding nuclear, that George said, I don't believe those of us who are around 60 or approaching 60, I don't believe we will see it in our lifetime.
No.
Maybe our children will have the opportunity. And I don't know which crew we will be on those ships when they come around in 30, 40 years' time. So it's anyone's guess at the moment. Let's see how things develop the next 5 years. And you make the same question in Posidonia 2028.
No, perfect. Thank you. I'm going to ask the last question, just yes or no, right? So we're starting from you, Paulus. Do you see a carbon tax for shipping, a global carbon tax, within the next 3 years or 3 to 5 years?
It looks that it's coming. And,
okay.
We know what we have now. We have the increasing EU ETS and the fuel EU, which is starting next year. So IMO, I think they are making the final stages of their deliberations. And I think that it will come the global tax, or so, you may call it as you may, as whatever you want to call it. And maybe the only thing we wish, if it comes, when it comes, just to replace the other ones, not to be, we have to pay the European ETS on top of it, we pay the fuel EU, and on top, top of it, we have to pay for global.
Perfect.
We want to be uniform, we want to be one across the board. Of course, we know that the polluter will repay this to us, but also it's a big nightmare for us to collect all those allowances from various people around the world. Some of them, they still pretend they don't know what it is all about and how we calculate this. we are sending our bills to them. We try to collect them, by the way, as early as possible. We have achieved around 60% to share this information with you. The others, they are still setting up accounts, how to buy this, how to do the other. Anyway, it will take time, and let's hope one lot comes in 2027 from IMO, and we finish with all this story, and we know what we pay worldwide.
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. I've run out of time. Just quickly, yes or no, Stamatis, global carbon tax?
It's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when.
Thank you. George?
No, same. Global regulation is needed, not regional measures, but you have to be prepared for both.
George, yes or no?
Joanna, what should I say? No. Yes.
Okay, perfect.
My score Nike there.
Thank you so much. Thanks. Please welcome, join me in welcoming the panel. Thank you so much.